Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Life on the front lines requires you to step up your game. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Mattson, CardoMax has designed just the right supplements for you and is offering Drinking Bros an exclusive offer. Buy one, get one free on your first order. Go to CardoMax.com and use the promo code DB. That's CardoMax.com. Helping you achieve your max.
Yeah.
Wow, kind of cut off short there.
Look at that.
I like the GhostBed.com. Because it sounds like something's happening.
Yeah, it does. It really does. And a lot's going on in the world today, especially in the world of sports, that we had to have Robin Lundgren on today. How are you,
Lundberg.
Buddy?
Sometimes we have...
I always mispronounce everybody's fucking names.
Oh, yeah.
To the end of the world. I'll never get anybody's name right. I'm the worst at it.
Don't feel bad about it because he also spent an entire episode mispronouncing
McConaughey's name. Michio Kaku. You name it. I've done it. Yeah. Like, I'm terrible. Robin, welcome to Drinking Bros. I'm half in the bag.
No, it's all good. Lundgren, right? I mean, that's Dolph. If he dies, he dies. I mean, there's a little bit of respect in that mispronunciation.
Yeah, Dolph Lundgren is probably the best actor of all time.
Maybe ever. How many Oscars does that guy have?
Zero.
Okay,
probably,
is it zero?
Right?
All right.
But he's got a degree in, he's got a master's degree in mechanical engineering. So I think it's, or chemistry maybe. I don't know what it is.
Life that guy has led. It is something like high up on the thing where it's like he didn't need the money for sure. He came back because he wanted to come back and be dope ass Dolph Lundgren again.
He's got a degree in chemical engineering from the Royal Institute of Technology.
Yeah. Did you know that, Robin?
I did not know that. So thank you. I learned something. I didn't know, like, you know, I wasn't sure on a show called Drinking Bros if I would leave learning something, but I learned something right off the bat.
Oh, you're gonna learn a lot today.
We're not just podcast hosts, we're also teachers. However, I can never get anybody's name right. Robin, first and foremost here, this Ben Zobrist thing is one of the craziest stories of all time. Are you following this at all?
You know, I sort of read a little bit about it. It's not the kind of thing I typically cover in my realm, but it does seem like a very sordid affair with an emphasis on the latter word.
Robin, this is the hard-hitting shit that you're missing in your everyday life, where we will really spend time on Ben Zobrist. If you don't know who that is, ex-Cubs star, also played for the Tampa Bay. Were they the Devil Rays at that point? They weren't the Rays.
He may have been. That's where he started his career.
Yeah. But he was Rays.
He was Rays.
He won titles with Kansas City and the Cubs. Yep. Not back-to-back years, but two years. Well, it was back-to-back 15 and 16, right? Yeah, you're right. So he won. He was kind of like the Craig Council or somebody like that. Just always showed up on playoff teams because he's the most versatile player in modern MLB history, probably, right? Unfortunately for him...
His wife was pretty versatile.
Yeah, this story is wild as shit, man. I don't even know where to start with this thing. And you said, Robin, that this isn't really your wheelhouse. What is your wheelhouse, if you don't mind me asking?
I cover all sports. I would say my area of expertise most strongly is the NBA. I just mean, like, for Sports Illustrated, we're typically not talking about affairs with pastors. But, you know, like, I'm not above it. It's not like I can't do it. You know, it's the same thing as, like, did you see I think the Daily Mail put out something about Tristan Thompson went into a room with three women and emerged disheveled. You know, that's not the thing I talk about on a day-to-day basis, but I did see it. And even though he's in a different uniform, Tristan Thompson's still cavalier about certain things, right? And
No
pun intended.
That's our only rule on this show is no puns. God damn it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I love the puns. I'm all day long with the puns.
We're putting puns out to pastor? I mean, I'm sorry.
There it is.
I've got a gun.
Can we get the applause? Do we still have the applause here? There it is. That deserves it.
Sorry, I'm shooting our employees now because... You used a pun.
That's two Somebody's and one, and we're I'm a giant fan of that. You already won the day today. But when your wife is having an affair with the pastor, who do you go to pray about your problems? Then I guess that's what I'm concerned with.
Well, it really depends on which version of Christianity you ascribe to, right? So if it's Catholicism, then they believe the intercessor between man and God is the Pope or priest, right? But in standard Christianity, the priesthood transferred from Aaron, who is Moses' little brother, to a guy named Melchizedek, and then to Jesus, and that's it.
Okay.
Right? So it just depends on where you fall.
Yeah. And I was in the CNE crowd growing up, yeah. Christmas and Easter.
So you learned something today, Mr. Dolph Lundgren Jr.
Yeah, Mr. Dolph Lundgren
Jr. I'm not a religious dude, but I thought the thing was with God, right? It's not like a barber. Is it? I mean, where you feel bad if you go to a different barber? Can you, you can't just go to any church, any pastor? You can't just, you know, do it in your yard or whatever?
I guess. No, I don't know.
You, when that plate comes around, you want to know that you're putting it in for the guy that's going to really give you the magical powers to go to heaven, right?
Yeah, I've been paying into pretty much every cult. There's no way that a mainstream religion got it right. So I've just been paying cult leaders and like, hey, just, it's a new turn on Pascal's wager. Pascal's wager is that just in case God exists, I'm going to do that whole thing, but sure. Probably doesn't, right? That's sure. Pascal's wager. I'm doing it just monetarily. I'm not going to actually do anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got shit. I got other shit to do. Yeah, like shoot our employees with Nerf guns.
Yeah. You have to. But this story is certainly bizarre. And the one that you were just talking about with Tristan Thompson and Khloe Kardashian, when you walk into a bedroom with three women, yes, you're going to appear disheveled afterwards. There's no way around it.
Well, I certainly hope
or,
so.
Or, yeah, you weren't doing your job as the one man in a room with three women.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Khloe. They jumped me. That's what that was. Here's my wallet. It's empty.
That whole thing is so doomed anyways. Look, you've covered the NBA for years and years and years. Did you hear about the fuck room? At the old Forum.
I've heard some of the stories. Yeah.
So you have. Okay, good. God damn it, man. We're going for it today. Again, we've been drinking all day, so who gives a shit at this point? I dated a Clippers cheerleader for a while, and when I lived in Los Angeles for like 18 years. And so I asked her about this fuck room. I was like, is this fuck room? Did it transfer? Did it transfer from the Forum over to Staples? Because I heard it did. And she was like, dude, I don't know, man. I've never seen it or heard about it. And I go, start asking around. Just start doing a little digging for me. This is before I had a podcast or anything like that. And well before marriage, obviously. But when she started digging around, I would say it was maybe a month later, she came back and she goes, oh, my God. There is a fucking room in Staples Center that is surrounded by security. None of us know what it is, but we do see basketball players going in and out of there. What do you know about that fuck room in LA?
More now. I did 3 seconds ago, right? I mean, I just like, well, you read, I think there was a Showtime, you know, book, or you see some of these legends that come across. You don't know what's actually true in some of that stuff. And I have not, done the deep investigative dive that you have. I think it seems like it might be one of your goals to get a tour.
Well, at some point. More than that, I wanted to fuck in that room. So I tried forever. Like I made friends with the security guards all season, the whole thing, and I was just like, I just want to go and have sex in the fuck room, like just once. It's kind of like the Lincoln bedroom for a lot of people when they go to the White House. Where if you don't bone in the Lincoln bedroom, are you a real
American? Well, I'm
American?
Pretty sure that Michael Irvin just did cocaine in the Lincoln bedroom. Or at least that's what he told us, right?
Yeah.
Like we had Mike on about 2 months ago, and he's pretty much, it's like, yeah, we did coke in the White House. I'm like, hey, man, congratulations.
That's what being an American is all about.
At least it's not Diet Coke, right?
No, not at all.
A day?
Not at all. But yeah, so this fuck room that I keep referencing that I love.
Is that on the outside of the door or like?
There was a placard.
It's
out
probably
there.
A number, right? Yeah. I think the new Warrior Stadium and actually in Oracle as well, all the numbers are all the rooms are numbered, uh-huh. right? On yeah. the down in the staff area. So it's probably numbers, right? What do you think that number is?
There's only one possible, really.
Robin, you got any ideas what the number of the fuck room would be?
What's the Wilt Chamberlain's record?
Oh, yeah, 20,000, right? 20,000. That's what he says, anyways. Room, yeah. There's no way. I mean, look, Genghis Khan has 45 million living descendants, so yep. Maybe it's possible.
Maybe.
But how did he have time to practice basketball or play it or eat if he's banging 20,000 women. Hey, how old was Wilt Chamberlain when he is he still alive?
Yeah, he's dead. R.I.P.
No, he's not. He's
okay, he died like recently though, right? Like no, he died in 90s.
No, he's
okay.
been dead for a little while.
Okay, so
very long time.
I'm thinking of somebody else. Let's see, 63 years he lived. Let's say he started fucking at 13, right?
That's an early one. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Let's see.
We'll go 13 because look, that's we didn't 50 know what years. It was like.
Yeah, he started playing professional basketball at 16 under a alias.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's 50 years. That's 400 women a year for 50 fucking years to get that number. There's no way,
man. That's tough. There's
no way. I mean, you would have to be trying to do it. And at that point, it seems like it would just be pointless, right?
I don't know. And here's so this.
Robin, what are we even talking about? We have like a legit sports reporter on here. We're talking about Ben Zobrist and fuck rooms. What the hell's going on?
Robin, this is where the fuck room comes into play. So the legend was Magic Johnson and those guys used to use it during halftime.
Wow. Hopefully he wasn't sharing anything.
Well, you know, who knows, right? But they used to go in there at halftime, and that was the thing of like trying to get them out of the locker room in time, and like that's how good the Lakers were in the 80s.
Wait,
and
the NBA
else.
Halftime is 20 minutes?
Yeah, it's not long.
So they're just trying to bang.
15 minutes.
Yeah.
It's 15. So. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's plenty of time.
Certainly for it's plenty of time, I guess. But like, you have to like be trying pretty hard to make all that happen.
But have you been to a Lakers game? I mean, there's so much ass there that it's just a nod to the first couple rows, and you're like, hey, let's bring her on down, and then, you know, whatever happens in there. But that thing was infamous, and it did switch over to Staples Center. Now, who was in there? I don't know. Lamar Odom comes to mind. But, you know, there were some Laker legends over the last 20 years that Staples has been open that property would transfer. I don't know if you can get away with it now, though, within like the last 3 or 4 years, but here we are.
No, you can't. There's no such thing as a staff employee or security guard keeping their mouth shut now. Everybody wants a fucking book deal.
Yes, dude. They all want that payday.
Yeah.
They want that payday. You're covering the Suns right now, right?
Yeah. The NBA playoffs as a whole, for sure. Mm.
Yeah. Well, we say the Suns because let's face it, after that guy beat the shit out of two people, Suns in four, I think that was the rallying call for our nation that's really going to bring everybody together.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans, Democrat, everybody, where it's like Suns in four. I'm a diehard Atlanta fan, and even I kind of want to see the Suns in four, just this series and the next series, so that guy will have to get his own statue outside the stadium.
But did you see the action figure that somebody made for that with the Suns in four guy? I think there is an action figure that they're selling. And I'm with you on that one because – as like, I'm not a proponent of violence. I'm not a guy who's gotten into a bunch of fights or whatever. But given the circumstances and the context of how that went down, right? This was not somebody that seemed to be going out of their way to be an imbecile. It seemed like he was responding to the person who was in the back row. And the control of the situation in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
To not only have the guy held there, get his couple licks in there, not go overboard with it, throw him to his boy, say, you know, I'll mess him up, and then hit him with the Suns in four on top of that. Just a moment in time and a true hero of modern times. Devin Booker, you know, got him some seats, I think, to the game because he had said something on Booker's IG page about, like, I hope I didn't embarrass the fan base or something, and Booker was like, no, legend.
Yeah, for sure. So you can look, I don't want to hate, but look at that guy, right? And then look at Steve Bartman, and then tell me that we've got a toxic masculinity problem in this country. Sons of Four Guys a hero, right? Steve Bartman is a fucking smarmy little turd.
Bartman is where you wanted to
sitting
go
there
today,
with
huh?
the earmuffs on and the fucking, like, what are you doing, dude? It's like at this, we went to the Austin FC inaugural home match this week.
Yeah, this past Saturday.
And McConaughey is out there banging his fucking bongo, which I assume he has one on him at all times.
That's got to be his.
I think he's got a bongo guy. It's an assistant that just follows him around just in case Matt needs to get high and play the bongo. Because sometimes you got to, right?
He was on the show a couple weeks ago, or a couple months ago. We didn't get to ask him. And that was our fault.
If he had a bongo guy?
If he had a bongo guy, yeah.
No, but he plays the bongo and everything. But I'm standing, there's the super fan section in the behind the Austin goal. And then there's two rows of fans on either side, and there's one row that's mostly just a walkway and standing room, and then they have mezzanine stuff. But on the two sides, most people are sitting down. It's hot as fuck. I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't sit down at a soccer match, right? And you don't. You're probably not a soccer guy, but that seems par for the course. I don't sit down at basketball games that much either. Not playoff games for sure.
No, no.
And when I've been to one of my old companies used to sponsor the Vegas Golden Knights. When you go to a hockey game in Vegas, playoffs or otherwise, nobody sits down for that whole thing. I don't understand it. Right?
About sitting down or the I don't sit down for that. The Suns fans clearly aren't sitting down for this shit that's going on. How crazy is that crowd down there? Because it looks loud on TV.
For me, the Phoenix?
Yeah.
I'm not in Phoenix. I was in Brooklyn on Saturday for game 7 of the Bucks and the Nets, but I'm out of the New York area.
Oh, I didn't know if they're sending you to cover this live.
Oh, no. I wasn't. The game I was at and I'm actually, here's one for you, because I know people are in search of this all the time. I am a Brooklyn Nets fan.
Oh, so wow.
If you want to know about the psychology of how one becomes a Brooklyn Nets fan, I can give you that.
Oh, one. Yeah, lay it on.
You're the one guy because.
All right. So I came to New York out of Maryland in 2004, straight out of college, right? And I, you know, been in the New York area since then. And I was a huge NBA fan doing New York sports talk radio at the time. So I was almost trying to will the Knicks into, you know, relevance and being good, because I wanted to talk about basketball more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all they were talking about was baseball all the time. And, you know, I feel like in its heart of hearts, New York wanted to be a basketball town. So I was like rationalizing Isaiah Thomas moves and talking myself into Eddie Curry, stuff like that. Recruiting LeBron to come in 2010. We even covered I did Max Kellerman show at the time, the New York Cavs of Cleveland, because the Knicks were so bad that we had to adopt the Cavs in hopes that LeBron would come. But eventually over time, aside from like Linsanity and one other season, the Knicks just sort of beat me down. I'm a huge Jay-Z fan. Nets go to Brooklyn. I'm at least intrigued at that point.
Sure.
I have a couple of young kids. And a few years ago, I just was like, you know what? I haven't had a team. I've got young kids. I like the direction of this squad. Their stuff is cool. It matches everything. I'm going to push my chips to the table. I went all in. And then the KD and the Kyrie stuff and everything after that happened. And if I'm being 100% frank about it, you know, like there are New Jersey Nets fans, but not that many of them. And the Brooklyn Nets are attempting to cultivate a fan base. So they're trying to get younger people. They're trying to get transplants. They're trying to get some converts. And I actually think being in that building for game 7 was the kind of, even though they lost, that was the kind of event that will bolster their fan base. Because I saw people hitting the team store right afterwards and all that. I think they did a lot to solidify their fan base going forward, because the joke in a sense is true. It's not like there are a bunch of longstanding Brooklyn Nets fans, but when you're looking at high profile Brooklyn Nets fans, if I count, I'm one of them.
Okay. So since you've self-identified as a Brooklyn Nets fan and you are a sports writer, reporter, et cetera, let's talk about Kyrie Irving a little bit. He's gotten a pretty bad rap over the last couple of years as selfish, bad teammate, maybe crazy with the flat earth bullshit.
He seems kind of an asshole.
He seems very distracted from basketball a lot. And I wonder what your take as a writer and as a fan of the team is, because look, he is frankly, he might be the best ball handler I've ever seen. I can't think of anybody that has better handles than him that I've ever seen in my life. Like, you could talk about Hardaway's crossover or Curry's ability to dart back and forth and get position on the court. But just as a straight up ball handler, we're talking about like Pete Maravich style stuff this guy does in the modern era. Fast hands. He's fast as fuck. Very good finisher. All this stuff. One of the best players in the NBA for sure. But it seems like weird shit keeps happening with this guy. Right.
Yeah, and for the record, Robin, I want to say this. I bet on them before the season started to win it all on mybookie.com. Obviously, promo code Drinking Bros doubles your deposits. I bet them to win it all, and if they didn't get injured, I think they would have smoked everybody.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree with that. And the people who don't use that as context, you know, you don't have a functioning brain.
Correct,
if you're holding them to the same standard that you would have had they not been injured.
No, I mean, look, we all would have loved to see the Lakers-Nets play, right? Both teams completely healthy. That would have been an amazing finals.
Lakers Nets would have been an all-timer.
Anyways,
that would have been great.
Back to Kyrie.
Back to Kyrie, though, yeah.
You're right about Kyrie. The best ball handler who's ever lived. maybe the most skilled player who's ever lived when you're talking about ball handling, shooting, finishing around the rim. You know, size holds him back, defense holds him back. I would say frustrating at times for sure, especially, you know, the whole like pawns thing, not because I'm a member of the media. I don't care. Just because it's like, come on, dude, why are you doing this? You didn't have to do that. It's one of those you didn't have to do it moments. And then the first sabbatical when he was at a birthday party or wherever he was. And it's like, bro. But I will say Kyrie, after his second PTO experience, seemed to come back with a good head on his shoulders, almost as if, and this is purely speculation, almost as if like he went and talked to somebody, you know,
yeah,
during that time period. And I would say the mercurial is probably the best word to describe Kyrie Irving. Yeah. Down to the flat earth thing was really annoying. Because you got a lot of people buying your shoes and everything. You can't have people thinking you're an idiot or believing that that's true, right?
Yeah.
So Kyrie is definitely unpredictable, both with the basketball in his hands and what he might do next, which is why it was almost insurance. It turned out to be a necessity, but at first I thought it was almost insurance to get James Harden.
It could have been. And man, they were blowing through people when they had all three.
Well, those three guys, or that starting lineup that they want, only played together 8 times during the regular season,
yeah,
all year, yeah, right? Yeah. So it's hard to say how good or bad they may have been. On the sabbatical thing, I mean, that's something, I'm sure you've seen The Last Dance 10 times like everybody else, and heard Phil talking about Rodman having to take a quick 2-day vacation to Vegas, right?
Yeah.
During the playoffs.
Yeah.
So it's nothing new. I don't know if Steve Nash is prepared to handle that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like people still see him as a fucking basketball guy, not a coach. Like,
Kevin Durant and Steve Nash are boys.
Yeah,
so for sure.
That really helps. And he's even killed. But the thing about Rodman, it wasn't just that he would go to, I do believe he also joined the NWO.
Yeah. He was a big Hulk Hogan.
That's a pretty
guy.
Big deal when you're joining the NWO in the midst of the playoffs.
Yeah. Because that's a lot of responsibility, obviously.
Yeah.
When you're wrestling with Hogan, that's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, because you never know when he's going to pop off.
And the Monday Night Wars and everything that was going on at that time was a lot of pressure.
Big. Some would say more than the actual NBA Finals.
Yeah.
I've got a signed Hogan belt right behind me on the wall.
Yeah, and we've got a signed Rodman jersey right above
right
that.
Right above that. Yeah, so, what are the chances?
you know, it's I wonder. Steve Nash is in kind of an impossible situation right now, I think. With that amount of talent on the team, you have two premier scorers, ball-dominant premier scorers, but premier scorers anyways, but they don't play defense. And you've got KD, who might be – I mean, KD's got to be in the running for the most – skilled basketball player of all time too, right? Because of his size, but what he can do lateral movement and jump shot wise, right?
Yeah.
So you have two of the best players of their generation, and then maybe the best scorer of this generation too, right? Or at least really good at drawing fouls on a team. How do you manage the fucking ball, right? I mean, if you leave these guys all to their own devices, they're going to do what they've done for years, which is be the best player on their team. KD, even with the Warriors, his usage rate did not fucking fall. Klay and Steph's usage rate fell, but his didn't.
Well,
you know what I mean?
The interesting thing to me, and I don't know if you feel the same way, was I felt even with two of them healthy, they still could have won it all in this weird season that we've had. I feel like if Harden was healthy with KD or vice versa with Kyrie, just two of them, they probably would have won it all. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I think the difference was it was 1.5 instead of 2.
Yeah.
You know, Harden with the hamstring and everything. As far as the one ball... You got to remember what era of the NBA we're in now, where the court is so spread, so many possessions in a given game. You know, like one of the reasons I think you're seeing a lot of injuries, aside from the condensed schedule and the shortened offseason, everybody talks about yesteryear, like, oh, they're so tough, you know, and whatever they would, you know, hit you with their forearm shiver and slam you in your solar plexus or whatever in the 80s. But today, there's so much more explosive movement.
Yeah.
Because you have to close out so often, you have to switch so often, do all that rather than watch somebody dump the ball into Patrick Ewing as he dribbles with his back facing the basket. You know, and I think that explosive movement, you're just putting more strain on the body, but there's so many more possessions. And I think the number one commodity in the league right now is shot creation. Guys who can create their own shot, followed by shooting. But the Nets had, you know, a luxury to have all that shot creation and the insurance of one of them getting hurt. The problem is more than one of them got hurt, and that was the difference. But I think if they were all on the court, they would have figured that out, because I think they all knew, you know, there was plenty to go around, I guess is what
for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think they did, in the limited time they were all on the court healthy together. The rate stats were pretty good. They weren't, nobody was dominating anything more than anybody else. It looked pretty good, but yeah, it's the same thing that happened with the Warriors a couple of years ago. Durant and Klay going down in the same postseason. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
One guy can't do it. Regardless of how good Draymond is at distributing the ball, you can't replace KD and Klay Thompson.
Yeah, no.
Honestly. And you can't replace James Harden and fucking Kyrie Irving. I don't think with anybody, really.
No, and I think the story of this playoffs, now that you're down to four, is whether or not Chris Paul can actually win his first title.
Or if he can even get on the court. Because we still... What's the...
He's out. I think he's out of that protocol. Is he playing tonight, Hot Bobby? Look, is Chris Paul playing tonight, do you know?
I believe his return was imminent the last I checked. I don't know if they officially announced for tonight, but I think he's going to be in there. You know, at most he would miss tonight. He was out for game one and he'll be back. You know, but the you guys hit on the one thing, when you talk about one guy in the NBA. I kind of think like NBA discourse is so broken. It's been so poisoned because of the way LeBron was covered for so long,
yep,
that no one else can ever think rationally again, because, you know, it's either you're holding people to this LeBron standard, or you're you know, consistently trying to undermine or prop your own agenda up about what goes on. And it leads to you never hear NFL media shitting on players the way you hear NBA media crapping on the players during, you know, if they miss a shot or don't take a team to the next level. But I think for the remainder of the playoffs, those storylines are definitely Chris Paul. And I think on the other side, it's Giannis and the Bucks, because Giannis is a two-time MVP, who a lot of people thought, you know, you can't be the MVP when you're getting bounced out of the playoffs. But he did a lot to solidify himself in this run. And it's tough in my line of work, because I've noticed, even by the metrics, that negativity does better. But is that really the way we should be talking about some of these guys, as great as they are, where we start nitpicking them to this crazy, sick degree? Because Skip Bayless has talked about LeBron every day on TV years and years.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. And by the way, that's why I just assumed, like, a guy of your stature, they just send you to all these things to cover it, like, game by game, because we are down to the final, you know, four at this point. And with the Suns in particular, that's why I said, I think Chris Paul is the biggest story of this. He's out tonight.
Him and Kawhi both out for game two.
What? Kawhi didn't even travel. So, I figured that was the case. So him and Kawhi are both out for tonight's game. That is breaking news there, Robin. So, shit. Well,
Kawhi, yeah, we don't know if he'll be back in the series. As far as the travel and stuff like that, I don't think most companies are completely out of COVID yet. So
we are. Dude, we never even did it. So, like, Dan and I, every 2 weeks, usually go to whatever the biggest thing is, you know, sporting-wise. And we don't give a shit across the board, like hockey, fights, whatever. I mean, we were at the Mayweather-Logan Paul fight, for Christ's sake. So,
yeah.
Great event you guys saw there, huh?
Yeah. So here's the thing, being there, right? And this is why I think it is important for people to go out and see this shit. You can read all the negative covers like you were talking about online. When you're there, you kind of understand why. Like, we were sitting there ringside. Chuck Liddell's show is on our network as well. So we were with Chuck Liddell for that. And when we were in that stadium, the reason for the clenching and the hugging and all that stuff, that was the hottest I've ever felt inside of a stadium before. The humidity was awful. It rained. Dude, I don't know how those guys had to have been exhausted. I was exhausted and sitting ringside watching them, let alone being in the actual ring.
Floyd Mayweather barely broke a sweat.
I don't know, man. He looked pretty wiped at the end of that thing. Like, it was muggy, is what I'll say. I think it was about 88 degrees, and that Miami humidity was awful.
It's also what heavier dudes do against lighter dudes to try and take out their legs, lean on them. I mean, that was the strategy that Paul used. Mayweather called it bank robbery or whatever he called it.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's what it was.
You're talking, I mean, I remember the one bet I wish I had made, you guys shouted out, who's your betting sponsor again?
My bookie.
Yeah. The one bet I wish I had made on my bookie was, my everything I had on Floyd Mayweather to beat Conor McGregor, even whatever the return was, which wasn't great at the time, because as much respect as I have for Conor McGregor, no diss to him, he's a mixed martial artist. He's polished. He's great. Floyd Mayweather is arguably the best boxer of all time, and he had never fought a professional fight before. That was a guarantee that Floyd was going to win. And this was even more of a joke. He's going up against a YouTube guy. You know, he hasn't even trained for that fight. But in a sense, it was like a microcosm of Floyd's career, where people try to talk themselves into whatever is going on with him and then leave pissed off how it went, despite that that's the way it goes every time. This was a bastardized version.
It's like trying
every Floyd Mayweather fight emerges with him victorious, people thinking he ran away the whole time and won on points, and then pissed off until they convince themselves somehow he's going
to
lose the next.
It's like trying to hit Greg Maddux.
Yeah.
Like this fucking goofy looking dude throwing 89 miles per hour is not getting me out. Well, he did it 363 times, bitch. He won 360 some games.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's probably the most talented pitcher just pitching wise ever.
Yeah. And he's throwing 89.
He just looks like a goofball.
But at that Mayweather fight, rounds 4, 5, and 6, he genuinely tried to knock him out. And
no,
just,
he did knock
could
him out.
Not.
He did knock him out.
I watched the footage. I don't know.
I've seen that video.
It's a clip.
Over and over and over again, and homeboy's bell gets rung, and fucking it's hard to say if Floyd knew what he was doing. Maybe Floyd just expected him
to lean
because like he was doing it all fight. Like you said, that is a strategy that boxers use. Coming up under Max, you would know that he's a fucking boxing aficionado, but that is certainly a strategy to use. But that one, he got hit hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he got hit in the side of the head, and he didn't see it coming. Talk about this all the time. The punch straight to the face with a 16-ounce glove usually doesn't knock anybody out. But that one that nicks your jaw that you don't see coming, your brain isn't prepared to receive that impact. Mm-hmm. That's the one that knocks you out typically, and that's he got one right in the temple.
Yeah.
Right? Looked like he got knocked out to me, but either way, I won $3,000 because I bet the fucking draw. Of course, I was going to get a draw.
We said that he would go all eight on this show. So,
yeah, I took the draw. I sprinkled 5 and 6 because I thought if he did knock him out, that's when it would be, and it was the fifth round when he did knock him out. But either way, I made my money. I don't give a shit.
Yeah,
I mean, you got to give him some respect, right? I mean, like you're in there with Floyd Mayweather. Whatever happened the whole time, it gave me an idea for a with all these YouTube celebrity boxers to do like. You ever see that show Tough Enough or one of those? YouTube KO. Mm-hmm. You take a whole bunch of YouTubers and you have them go through a boxing training camp and see who emerges the YouTube champion.
Oh, that'd be good. Like the Contender Series almost.
Or what do you call it? Ultimate Fighter.
Dude, the YouTube would make bank off of that.
Yeah.
I know they tried to back the truck up for Jake Paul for his next fight. And he said no. Here we are in America.
You're saying about Logan, props to him. I'm not going to fight Floyd Mayweather.
No, it's crazy.
That. I mean, I would do it for $30 million. Come on.
Obviously.
But I'm not going to fucking just like, I'm not going to go out and look, I'm 4 inches taller than him and probably weigh about 50, 60 more pounds. So in a real fight, I would destroy this dude, right? I would just get him down on the ground and there's nothing he could do about it because of my mass. But boxing, he would beat the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Like he would make me look like an asshole, and I don't know if that's worth $30 million.
Yes, it
is. You can do something else and make $30 million. We'll just go rob a bank or something.
What's the craziest sporting event you've been to in person?
Oh, to be honest, two come to mind. One is this past Saturday, Game 7, Nets Bucks. Just from like that's the best game I've ever been to.
It was an amazing game.
The other two would be Floyd Mayweather and Victor Ortiz. In Vegas, where that was the fight where they came out to touch gloves. Ortiz had been headbutting him the whole time.
Yeah.
And instead of touching gloves, Mayweather just cold cocked him and knocked him out. And everybody was like talking about that immediately thereafter. And the third would be, it was the day before the Super Bowl, because I had been out covering the Super Bowl. I flew back to cover the Knicks game. It was the Linsanity game, the first game against the Nets and Deron Williams. And I just remember standing there, Dan D'Antoni, Mike D'Antoni's brother, goes up to Jeremy Lin, who's doing a quad stretch, and says, you know, be ready tonight. And, you know, the rest was the Linsanity. So those are probably, I think, the top three.
They did a 30 for 30 on Linsanity. And, yeah, dude, that whole story was insane.
What's going on with him these days?
I feel like he's a pretty good basketball player,
and I don't understand why he hasn't been on a team like starting continuously.
Yeah, he's going back to China, I think, to play for the Beijing Sharks again.
Well, shit, he can make more money over there, probably.
I feel like he was better than he was given credit for.
For sure.
People wanted to make him a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
And he was much, I thought he had all-star potential, like legitimate all-star potential, and he had situational bad luck. You know, he goes to Houston. The Knicks should have, just off goodwill, the Knicks should have brought him back. But he goes to Houston, and immediately thereafter, he's supposed to be the guy they trade for James Harden. So he gets moved off the ball, which is his natural role. Then he goes to the Lakers and plays with, you know, later stage Kobe Bryant and that crew, and it just doesn't work out. He rehabilitated himself in Charlotte as a role player, as a six man, like a combo guard on the Hornets, before he legitimately got a crack again with the Nets to like be the guy. And then he had injury troubles. He had a hamstring and he blew out his knee. After he blew out his knee, he wasn't quite the same player. And, you know, he hasn't gotten a legit crack since. He was, I think, the leading scorer in the G League who didn't get a professional opportunity. I guess the reasons for that are a few, you know, his age and all that. You're looking for younger guys. And then there is like a little bit of hysteria that comes with him because he has like a dedicated sycophant fan base that follows him a little bit. And maybe if you're not going to play him, that's not the kind of thing you want around the team at the same time. But he got hit with a little bit of bad luck after having, you know, one of the coolest underdoggy kind of sports stories you'll ever see.
And the Asian media is pretty crazy as well. So I'm sure they were tired of the press credentials and all that other shit that comes along with that. I mean, I remember Ichiro at his height, like that was madness here.
Well, it's like Tebow to a certain extent, right? Where there's a degree of hysteria around a player. And if that player is not a star where you're like, oh, we love it, then is it more of a headache than not because they're clamoring for this guy who's sitting on the end of the bench at that point?
Hey, Robin, with everything you've done, you know we've got some sponsors who pay for the show to be on the air and give us all life. First and foremost, ghostbed.com/drinking bros. Here we go, kids. The 4th of July sale is here at ghostbed.com/drinking bros. 7 hours that thing kicks off. Go to ghostbed.com/drinking bros and see what the best deals are for you. See what your needs are as far as mattresses, sheets, pillows, adjustable bases. Go there and check out all the deals. I know the 30% off deal with two free pillows is still going on, but there's a bunch of hidden deals in there as well if you click on the bundle packages and whatnot. And the beauty of it is you can tie them all together and then use the 36-month pay-as-you-go program, no interest with that, and kind of divvy up the money a little bit throughout the months. You know what I'm saying? There's a running calculator that goes with it, so whatever you add in your shopping cart, it'll definitely tell you what's in there per month and how much you're paying per month. And I don't know anybody else who's doing that. So go to ghostbed.com/drinking bros today and get on dem deals. Next up, man, we were drinking this today, dude. Try firstleaf.com/drinking bros. Wine of the month club, kids. Best in the biz. At tryfirstleaf.com/drinking bros. If you join today, you're going to get 6 bottles of wine for $29.95 and free shipping. Who does that? Look, I've been a member now for, just over a year, I think. The beauty of this, I know this inside and out because I get this to my house every single month. You can go in and change them. So, you know, whatever your kind of flavor profile is, once you get these wines, you could rate them, they're going to store them, and then they'll kick them back out to you. Also, if you want, like my wife drinks in the summertime, she drinks all white wines. She likes a little crisp. She thinks the reds are too heavy in Texas during the Texas heat, and I get that. You can go in and change them all to white and reds, which we did last night. We changed them all to whites. It was great. You have the option to do all of it, and then you can swap out each bottle of wine, too. So it'll tell you which six are coming to your house, and then you'll be like, all right, great. I like these four. Maybe I'm going to swap out these two, and then they'll put them in for you. You can also decide if you want them to be American wines or come from overseas. That's the beauty of it. I don't know that you'll find a better wine club than this. And it, dude, when you're getting six bottles for $29.95 and free shipping, come on, dude. What are you doing? Give it a try. Because the other part about it is that, you know, as the months go along, if you're out of town or somewhere else, you can pause it and then come back to it. So, you know, if you want a California red, something from Oregon, something organic, they got everything. They got everything there. Fully customizable wine club. First Leaf is best in the business. There's no misguided recommendations. Shit. I don't know that I've had a bad bottle of wine there, to be honest with you. D'Anthony's been a member for a long time as well. They use a one-of-a-kind algorithm, plus your feedback to curate your future wine recommendations. And the more wines you taste and review, the better your shipments get as you keep going along. That has certainly happened with me. Save time, money, and stress with First Leaf, the wine club designed with you in mind. Join today and you'll get six bottles of wine for $29.95 and free shipping. Just go to tryfirstleaf.com/drinkingbros. That is six bottles of wine for $29.95 and free shipping at tryfirstleaf.com/drinkingbros. Yeah.
It's a good point. I mean, it's actually a good point with the announcement yesterday of the Raiders defensive end that came out as gay, right? I feel like you don't want to judge anybody on their timing and stuff like that, but I think it was probably smart of him to wait until he was a solidified NFL starter and Pro Bowl caliber fucking defensive end before he said something, because Michael Sam was undersized and stuff, but you got to think that NFL teams who have shown maybe more so than any other sports league a propensity to box dudes out if they don't like the press they're getting, it seemed like he never really got a shot at all. Right.
But now this season is going to be all about him.
It might be. Yeah. But I mean, he's already a good player. You know what I mean? So I just think it'll probably be most of the comments you're hearing from all the other players is like, dope. It'll be nice when we don't have to make these announcements anymore. People just don't give a shit.
Because
that's what he said, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it is interesting, especially in the NFL. I don't know how much NBA teams do this, but definitely in the NFL, they try to steer clear of that bullshit.
Well, Warren Moon came out today and said, look, man, I play with a few gay dudes over the years. And he goes, nobody really gives a shit. So, yeah.
Well, hopefully. Well,
I mean, you would hope that would be the case, right? And to what you were saying, I think the tenor has probably changed over the years now where
for sure.
It's actually the opposite. If they were to do something at this point, the media and a whole bunch of other people would have at them for probably, you know, whether or not it was the case for singling him out.
Right. I mean, I don't want to be judgmental sounding or cast aspersion or anything, but I think it was a mistake for Michael Sam to come out when he did. Like, he should have done the shit first and then prove you can do it. And like, by the way, this also, I mean, look, live your
it
life.
It didn't
and do
seem
what you
like
want.
He wanted to play that much. And it was strange because he was the all defensive player of the year in the SEC, if I remember correctly.
But he would have been like a fucking, probably a strong safety or an outside linebacker.
No, he wouldn't have been a safety. Right? He would have had to be.
Was he not fast enough for that?
No, I mean, he wasn't big enough.
He would have had to say defensive end or be a linebacker. Rob, you know, I went to Mizzou, and so I followed Michael Sam's career pretty closely. He could have played in the NFL. I don't know how long his career would have been because of his size.
Yeah, yeah.
But he did benefit. He did also benefit from having an insane defensive line that he played on that year. He won everything. That said, he took advantage of every non-double team that he got, like the single matchups.
He's a very smart player. Maybe not with the same physical skills as other people, but I mean, I definitely feel like he would have been probably 5-7 year career in the NFL playing, even if he's a third down guy or something like that.
So that's the thing is, third and long, you want, because he was intensely high motor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I just don't think he wanted to play.
But I also feel like he didn't really get a shot either. I mean, it wasn't
teams
were getting down the
door. Like some of these guys who are college players just aren't NFL players, right? And the one thing I would caution, I would say, like, as difficult as it, you know, I don't know, being a straight guy, but as difficult as it apparently is for people, especially in those professions, that walk of life, to do it, I don't want to be like, you picked a bad time, when that's, you know, just kind of being who you are and putting it out there, right?
Yeah. Speaking of which, we'll switch over to the Olympics that are coming up, because it is going to be on now. Seeing the trials on TV last week, like, I was amped. I like the Olympics. I'm an Olympics guy. I love them. To me, anytime I don't have to watch the Little League Baseball World Series throughout the summer and I can watch the Olympics going into football season, like, I'm good to go. Don't jam the Little League World Series in my face every single day.
That's un-American of you to not like the Little League World
Series. I've got two boys, right? And look, maybe they could play in one of those things one day. It'll be fine as me a father, but I don't need you to force that on the nation. I want to see.
They're not forcing it on the nation. They're putting it on television, bitch. No, there's like 180 other channels you can watch.
No. ESPN is taken over by the Little League Baseball World Series action. And I hate it, Robin, and I won't stand for it anymore. I'm done with that. But the Olympics are on, so that's going to nuke that this year, and I'm amped. This New Zealand weightlifter, who's going to be the first openly trans competitor, what are your thoughts on that? Because I know that's really a controversial topic these days about which side you're on that.
You know what? It's a controversial topic, I think, because people are so afraid to say something that's going to get them in trouble, right? Like, you see it all the time where comedians are railing against cancel culture or whatnot. And I am a person who both would be considered extremely liberal leaning, but at the same time does think we go over the top in reacting to certain things, right? Like, every day there's a new controversy, and so many of them are nothing. Like, what are we doing? Why are we wasting our time on this? Because then when you talk about the real thing, it's going to be a boy who cried wolf situation.
Yeah.
And to get to my point here, I firmly and strongly believe that everybody should live their life, live their truth, be who they want to be without being discriminated against whatsoever. At the same time, there are biological differences between men and women, correct? Mm-hmm. So that's where this is such a tricky situation, because if you're having an honest conversation about it and you're saying, you know, there could be an advantage for a biological male to be competing against females just simply due to biology, not for any other judgmental reason, right? You can be considered a pariah or something like that. And it said you're not an ally. I don't want anyone to feel excluded, you know, against or any of that stuff. But yeah, I think people are afraid to have a real conversation about it more so than anything. And then the only thing you actually get are the extreme sides of the people who come into it with their agenda and what they're trying to get accomplished, rather than reasonable people having a reasonable conversation.
Right. The problem is in this situation is that there's no good answer, right? Because it's not. People have an innate sense of justice and fairness because they apply a situation like, well, if that were me, I would want this. And a biological male that's a trans woman at this point, that's worked their whole life being athletic and it means a lot to them, it sucks, right? That because of them being who they are as a human being, they have to take certain supplements or whatever the fuck that make them ineligible to compete in those sports in the gender that they are assigned, or that they were assigned at birth, whatever the fuck. Or they are now, rather. That sucks. It's unfair. But life sucks and is unfair. And the problem doesn't go away because we get mad at each other and take sides, right? And maybe there isn't a good solution to this, too. That scares people when they don't see a way out of a situation. Like, if your house is on fire, you can throw water on it, right? Put it out.
But look, another Olympics, if that's what you want to do, start separating it. Cause I look at this woman now, Laurel Hubbard is a weightlifter. Heavyweight weightlifter. And she is making the Olympic Games at the age of 43, which also isn't typical unless you were able to switch and compete against women. That's a difficult thing to do. So what happens if she ends up winning at 43 years old? Then what? I mean, because if you're putting track athletes against each other, we're in the state of Texas, by the way. We're out of Austin, Texas. There, I think it was recently. Did a wheelchair just ban that here, Bob? Trans athletes for high school.
Man, he's been pushing a lot of bills.
Yeah, there's a lot of bills. Yeah, yeah. One of them is that I know a lot of states are pushing for that now, and it's like, dude, we've all seen the footage of these girls getting smoked out there on the track. Me personally, I think there's gotta, if you want to do this because of the biological reasons, nothing more than that, just simple biology, you'd almost have to have another set of games because in weightlifting at the age of 43, I mean, it's next to impossible to do that unless you were a dude.
Well, we know Zuby, right? That British rapper that broke the female. He just like identified.
Well, it was a
stunt, right? But I mean, come on, man.
Yeah.
Like bone density, muscle mass. It's the end of the goddamn conversation. Elevated testosterone. End of conversation. It's different.
So, Robin, what happens if she wins then? Then what?
Yeah. I mean, here's like if Caitlyn Jenner had run in the women's side of the Olympics, what would the result have been, right, at that point in time? It's tough. I don't know the answer. Like you said, I think I would need to know. I would need to do more research myself on what the medication does, how it changes things, you know, where these sports are at various competitive levels, because I think there's some areas where it doesn't matter, right? Like
right.
Mm-hmm. Boys and girls play sports together all the time, stuff like that. So
right.
my the way I would typically lean would be if it's cool and it's not putting somebody at a complete competitive disadvantage, I'd rather sacrifice a little bit of that to make sure somebody's happy and somebody is fulfilling their dream.
Right.
But I can't argue with the point of view that there could be a competitive advantage. So I would need to think about it.
I don't think there's a good solution for that at all, because one of the things
have separate games.
I mean, maybe, but it's like you're talking about a tiny fraction of the population, which is going to be an even tinier fraction of the athletic population. So it would be separate but equal is never equal, right never. We've established that for in a variety of ways in this country, but I also don't want to get into a situation where we're setting like statistical limits on biological shit. For example, like your testosterone can't be above X, right? So that means like, how do you know that is the line? Because some people have naturally higher testosterone. People, the drug that Lance Armstrong took, for example, to put more oxygen into his bloodstream, among other things, but mostly that. There was a cross-country skier in Scandinavia back in the day, and his, like, where a normal oxygenation in the blood would be somewhere in the fucking, like, 50s or something like that for most people, and not O2 level, but other metrics. His was, like, 82, which means he could just keep pumping forever and never stop because his body just absorbs oxygen that way, naturally like that. Some people are like that, and it's the luck of the draw. I mean, LeBron James won the fucking physical lottery.
Yeah.
He's got the best body of any athlete ever, right? And of course he was going to be successful, especially as hard as he worked. So that's just how it is sometimes. See, I don't want to fucking, what if we have this incredibly talented person that's in that system, but we just remove all their talent away with a drug?
Yeah, so
to make it fair? I mean, that's fucked up.
And I'm glad you brought that up. So, because I was looking at the International Olympic Committee's requirements for athletes who transition from male to female, and that's interesting in its own. Mm-hmm. There's different requirements for each one, but this one states here for the IOC, the requirements stipulate that the athlete must declare that her gender identity is female and can't change that status for sports purposes for at least 4 years. That's the first one, which isn't going to do shit.
That's like, weird.
4 years isn't really, to me, long enough to determine anything. Next up, the athlete's testosterone level must stay below 10 nanomoles per liter.
Right. So if you, for example, if this woman were to win, the Olympic Committee has the right to test her blood for the next 4 years, or if she gets stripped of her fucking medals?
I don't know, but here's the odd part
like
about
this. Like, how do you even fucking do that?
But here's the wildest part about all of this, which should solve the debate, but doesn't. Those who transition, this is according to the IOC, those who transition from female to male are eligible to compete in the male category without restriction.
So you could just go to 1100 test.
A female can just compete against dudes right away and you're good to go.
Or can you even get that high as a female? I don't even know.
I don't know, but you don't have to wait and there is no restriction. Hmm. So if you wanted to do it tomorrow, congratulations.
Well, I mean, that is common sense in the sense of what we're talking
sense, yeah.
about, right? I mean, you're not yeah. at any sort of advantage. It's the opposite, the other way around. I don't know what to, I don't know, you know, they know more, they've spent more time researching and thinking about this than I have.
Right.
So I will, you know, defer to the IOC rather than what I see in this case.
Yeah.
But it is a frustrating situation because I very much don't want to alienate anybody or make anybody feel less than, but there's if you're not talking about it in a certain way, you're being intellectually dishonest as well.
I agree.
Yeah. Cause you know, with this, this woman transitioned to female 8 years ago at the age of 35. Mm-hmm. Before the transition, he then competed in men's events, setting national records in junior competition. Blah, blah, blah.
So he was already an exceptional athlete before this.
Correct.
And now is just an exceptional athlete. Like, how much better is this woman than he was? Or how much better is this woman than the field?
I don't know. But we're going to find out
I think
in the Olympics.
I think that's got to be part of it. If you go through the qualifiers and you're beating everybody by a rate of 20 to 30%, whereas most champions beat people by 5 to 10%,
mm-hmm.
then I think maybe that's something. But it's, look, we don't have that data. And the other part of this is if you were to separate it, only the West would be allowed to participate in that, right? Because the Middle East sure as shit isn't fucking dealing with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So at what point does it just become xenophobic? Like, oh, this is just your own little thing that we're not eligible for because whatever, right? I mean, it's...
But then that's a deeper conversation too, right? Because you can't say, you know, then if you're saying you're xenophobic, you're also... tacitly approving of oppression and discrimination.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
It's,
yeah.
It's a whole Pandora's box.
Yeah. Oh, it is. And like, because look, with all this stuff, you're on CBS and all this stuff. Like, you've done ESPN. You've done it all. I feel like in your career, mm-hmm. has any of these networks ever hamstrung you and said, "Hey, dude, we're not going to talk about this," or you know, stay away from this category.
Every now and then, you know, it used to be a politics thing. That used to be the ESPN rule. It was politics.
Yeah.
And I remember right before Trump, right? Like, I was like starting to be like, what are we going to do?
because, it's every you know, day.
Like,
yeah.
A lot of what happened after that, I wouldn't put under the word politics. Politics is like a shield word, right? Mm. It's something you use to avoid talking about stuff because, I'm not talking about politics. Well, a lot of these things aren't, you know, we're not talking about like whether a bill will pass legislation or something, right? Like you were talking about humanity and you were talking about like democracy and all these broader topics. And that was the thing. And I think that's eroded some because you see the intersection almost to the point of, or not almost to the point, to the point of backlash where people say sports, people talk about, you know, social issues too much or quote unquote politics too much.
Mm.
Yeah, there've been a select few times where it's been suggested to avoid, or you use your own, like, you know, your spidey senses tingling. Is it worth the lift in you know, if it's not a topic that's really on everybody's mind at that time? But then there's the unavoidable ones, and that's when you have to be comfortable being a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah. Have you enjoyed, because again, somebody who's like a career as long as yours at this point, did you enjoy it more before politics came into the picture? Because I feel like it really wasn't until 2016 that everybody was talking about shit. Like, I personally, looking back at it, because we've hosted this show for about 7 years, I look at it like I enjoyed sports more before the political aspect got into it. And now, you know, there's shit on the court, shoes, everybody's talking about it.
Yeah.
And then they, more and more reporters are asking for their opinions after the game. I mean, right after the game's over.
Well, they're trying to get clicks.
Yes, right? They are.
I mean, that's what they're trying to do for sure. But the players and the branding, I mean, everybody, a lot of people were butthurt at Jordan for saying, he was joking when he said Republicans buy sneakers too. But,
I don't know if he was joking.
Well, he said he was joking, but he probably wasn't. I mean, he's a fucking billionaire. Come on, man.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, I wonder what your thoughts are.
Yeah, did
Robin.
You did you enjoy it more?
Well, I mean, what I'm asking is, what are your thoughts on that? Two, did you enjoy more? And two, do you think that the decline in viewership for some of these sports is linked to that some way? Because I don't know if it is or not.
No, I don't think it really. Look, I think there could be a small percentage, right? Like there could be a, you know, I don't know how you measure all that. But look at the, I'll use the NBA as an example. NBA playoff ratings are up 40% this year, right? Like you can't tell me that that's because it's less, you know, Black Lives Matter or something right. like that, as much as what happened last year was unprecedented. You know, right. everything was down across the board last year. The NBA finals were being played in October. you know, people were in their houses all day. Their whole schedules, their routines were changed, mm-hmm. not to mention the way that media consumption has changed. So I won't tell you there isn't a portion of the audience that says I'm not watching because of that, because I can't tell you that honestly. But I don't think that was the reason. And I think disingenuous actors were the ones who were saying that was the reason.
What do you think? As far as what are the numbers look like this year versus 2019? I think that's a better comparison.
They've had some games that were like a 3-year high of late, but it's more, you know, look, TV ratings are going down in general. That's the trend.
Because for sure,
more
yeah.
streaming and more options and all that stuff. But they definitely had a bounce back this year. As far as the broader question goes, sports and politics have always been linked. Sports and real life have always been linked. You go back to Muhammad Ali and some of the things that made him famous, right? I think Trump was another variable, another dynamic that you threw in there, like almost like a Molotov cocktail that got thrown into the mix, because he would purposely do it. Like his red meat was the sons of bitches who were kneeling on the field, right? Like he would do that whenever something else was going on. And he liked that topic more. So he would try to divert to that topic, because one of the things he was really good at is media manipulation. Mm-hmm. And that became, you know, at some point I had to declare like, no, we're not talking about kneeling before the anthem anymore, because you're not getting anywhere. It's like, disgusting version of the Michael Jordan LeBron debate, where we're actually dealing with an important issue, but no one would ever actually have a real conversation about it because they were too polarized about something. Look, you can't tell another human being how they're going to feel. You see George Floyd murdered on camera. Of course, people are going to feel a certain way. At the same time, I do think since Trump left office, you've seen that all relax a little bit, because there are still going to be things that pop up, but that particular variable was removed. So it's not being as egged on. His tweets, what he's saying, aren't being thrown back into the discourse. So of course you're still going to have people giving their opinions, or you're still going to have people standing up for what they believe in, but it's much less a part of the daily news cycle. You know, he's not railing about saving college football or you know, NFL players and the ratings and all that. And I think that's a big difference, where there's almost a pre-Trump and a post-Trump.
Got it. Yeah. And again, it was more or less curiosity of whether or not you enjoyed it more, because, you know, for me as a kid who grew up just watching SportsCenter fucking every single night and everything else, like when Jemele Hill was on there, I was like, man, I'm not turning on the 6 o'clock SportsCenter to watch politics. I'm turning it off, because 6 o'clock is local news typically, and then you got national news at 6:30. I don't want to watch anything news related on sports.
Yeah, but it wasn't the players for me, or the broadcast really. Like that never really. I don't really pay attention to what. Like if my mechanic starts talking to me about cooking, I'm probably going to tune that shit out.
Why?
Unless Dan? I know for some other reason that he's a good mechanic. If I need to get someone's opinion on physics, I'm going to pick up the phone and call Brian Keating at the University of San Diego, and not Kyrie Irving, right? So when these people like LeBron James, who is deep-throatedly supported China, despite the fact that they have 1,200 active concentration camps for Uyghur Muslims, starts talking about social justice, I just roll my eyes and move on with my day, because the guy's a clown, right? And at least in that regard. So it never was that for me. But with SportsCenter, or with TV shows in general, that shit does get needling after a while, because I just want to know what the fucking score was and what these former professional athletes think about the score of the game. I don't care about all that other bullshit.
Well, I'd say a few things. One, you can't tell people what to talk about or not talk about, right?
Correct.
You can disagree with them.
Yeah.
So, like, if you want to point out you don't like what LeBron said about China, cool. But I had a whole bunch of people that then wanted to have that undo everything else he did, like build a school, which I, you know, I worked with the students of that school, and I would ask them, you know, what phone are you calling from? Oh, is it an iPhone?
Yeah.
You know, are you supporting China?
For sure.
As well, you know, like, so there's that aspect of it. There is...
There's a different, there's a subtle difference there. LeBron James, off of his statement, is protecting the fact that he makes tens or hundreds of millions of dollars off China. I paid for this shit. All right. So I don't think that's not a very good comparison.
I also think, though, in that moment, and LeBron didn't artfully express this as much, but they were there. And I think what he was trying to say was, if you knew as much about China as you think you do, Daryl Morey, why are you saying that while we're all over there? I think that
LeBron, he's back now, so he could fucking stand up and say, hey, you know what? China shouldn't be murdering Uyghur Muslims or jamming needles into pregnant, 6-month pregnant ladies' bellies and aborting their kids. Maybe like this guy's I love the school shit. And I think that's great. He's one of the only people that are talking social justice that's actually doing something real for sure. Here in America.
Forgetting LeBron for a second, though, like what you're saying, if you genuinely feel the way, you know, one genuinely feels the way they do about China and wants to express that, of course you should do it. I think a lot of people use that as just a way to rail against, you know, the NBA or him specifically with their agendas. The broader conversations about some of this stuff, I totally get if sports are, what's the metaphor people use, the candy store. Or whatever. And, you know, there's been a lot of my career where I've just wanted to talk about fun stuff and lighthearted stuff and sports. At the same time, I think there's also been something constructive in the sense of with a sports audience, you can have a different kind of conversation than you might have otherwise. And you can really hear from a broad, you do a national radio show, right? You can hear from a broad range of voices that you wouldn't talk to about that issue if it wasn't for sports, right? If it wasn't for that being the entryway, and that can be very enlightening. I just don't like the, and I think you hinted at this earlier, the, you know, mothership that's always above your head. And you have to like the box that kind of can put you in a little bit, because if you're having an open and honest conversation about it, it could be fun. But look, I get it. I get somebody who says that's not why I'm tuning into sports. At the same time, I get people saying tough, you know, that's what I think. And that's what I want to talk about.
Yeah. I actually don't mind hearing some of it sometimes. From the athletes, I don't give a fuck what Kornheiser thinks though. Like, I want to know what he thinks about the games.
Right.
If the athletes want to use their platform to talk about whatever, that's cool. But I don't need to hear another 3 hours of people discussing some shit that they clearly have no experience with. You know what I mean? It's just, it seems nonsensical to me, especially when it's done so in such a disingenuous way. Like, all the apologists for LeBron and the NBA and their dealings with China, fuck that. They have 1,200 active concentration camps. That ends the debate. There's no fucking gray area there. They either do or they don't. As bad as some things can be in America from time to time, or the West or other countries, we don't have concentration camps.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Who fought a war about that shit not too long ago. And the fact that this guy keeps... Look, which production house did the new fucking Space Jam movie?
I believe it was Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers, okay. Or Sony, yes.
Well, if it's Sony, we know who owns that, right?
Right, right.
But what's five of the eight? Which one?
Yeah, it's Warner
WB.
Brothers.
Who
yeah.
owns Warner Brothers?
You know, that's a great question.
I don't know the answer to that, I do know that the Chinese box office represents the largest purchase potential in film that exists on Earth right now.
Space Jam will crush there.
Yeah, it will.
It's why John Cena apologized, right?
Yeah.
It's why, you know, Disney, Mark, I mean, Marvel movies do huge over there. So it's a very slippery slope thing, because eventually you're getting everybody and you're talking about everybody.
Right.
Like, that's, you know, the bottom line is, America has been run by dollars for a long time too. So if that's the way we operate, then that's a place people are going to want to operate in.
For sure. Yeah. And so I'm not going to fucking go down the list and take away any of his other achievements or any of the good work he's done in Ohio specifically over the years, or the schools that he's built, or any of the other stuff. But there's only one side of the concentration camp issue to be on. And if you're on the wrong side of it and it's because of money, only a certain kind of human being would do that. And that is a piece of shit human being. Right.
Or, I mean, look, let me play the other side for a second. There is a degree of, I don't know if ignorance is the right word, but it, maybe it is for a lot of people who aren't, you know, I've always said, this is what I said to callers too. If you have a, you know, if you have a legitimate beef with what he said and you can articulate why, cool. If you're just railing on it for no reason, then what are we actually doing? And I think there are a lot of people who are much more naturally so aware of what's going on here than what's going on there.
Yeah, well, Dan's case, he served in the military, so he was overseas for years and years and years, and he's seen the worst of humanity. And
that's what I'm saying. If it's righteous anger, I can't.
Yeah.
I just want one reporter. Not that I'm challenging you specifically or anything. Mm-hmm. Pause for effect. but to ask him, like, hey, you're making a lot of money on China. They have 1,200 concentration camps. Do you want to address that issue?
I don't think they will, but here's why. LeBron, like you were
saying
earlier.
He'll cut off access to you if you do that. It's the same thing with the White House. People went through this with Trump back in the day.
Yeah.
He would stop getting, Biden's doing it right now, too.
Yeah.
They'll stop calling on you or stop inviting you to things if you question their authority, which is a problem because the press exists to question authority. It's the only reason it even exists.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we've backed ourselves into a fucking hole here.
The NBA also had fallout from that. I mean, I know everybody lumped it, but Adam Silver did, you know, say Maury can tweet what he wants to tweet, and then China did take their product off TV. So as much as people want to say, like, the NBA was kowtowing to China, individuals may have said certain things.
Right.
But as a whole, the league didn't come out of that, at least in the meantime, or in the immediate aftermath, in a good situation, and they lost a lot of money because of
it. Right. Are they televising it now? Did it come back?
I do think it eventually came back, but it took a while.
Gotcha.
Well, at least LeBron didn't learn Mandarin.
Yeah, well, John
Cena
did.
And then do that stupid shit. God damn it,
you
man.
Can't see me.
That was one of the most pathetic displays in all of human history right there. I mean, Jesus Christ, man. Anyways.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hey, last question for you here. One of your colleagues, Dan Lebatard, our former colleagues, he got the bag of $50 million for 3 years. When you see a deal like that, are you like, shit, man, I should really switch into podcasting?
Well, look, I mean, I do podcasting, and I think the thing everybody's trying to figure out is the media landscape right now and the perfect formula. I try to fight back against that hint of jealousy that's always there, right?
It's crazy, right? You know, 50 million.
When's that going to be me, right? That's the dream. What he just did is the dream, to have, like, basically full autonomy to do the show that you want to do and to have support from your partners without any sort of creative interference or anything like that. Congratulations. He's a hero for that, because that is the dream.
Yeah.
And he's, I love that dude.
Are you a Lebatard fan?
Yeah, he's hilarious.
He's all right.
He talks a lot of shit.
Stu Gatz, I like a little more, and the dad, you know.
I like the dad, but the dad is like, you know, he's like sauce. You know what I mean? Like, you need a little bit of it, but too much sauce is right.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. Now's the point in the show. We get to the drinking bro of the week, who is someone who's inspired you, helps you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the drinking bro of the week to?
Inspired? Jay-Z.
Really?
You know, for bringing the team to fucking Brooklyn,
my motivational speaker, and not for any of the material aspects of it or anything like that. Just for that attitude, you know, to eventually get to where Lebatard is.
Yeah.
You know, that attitude of, I'm going to do it, I'm going to make it because I'm who I am. I'll give it to Hope.
Man, have you met him in real life?
One time, real quick, at Madison Square Garden. It was after, there was back-to-back games. Kobe went for 60-something, and then LeBron went for a 50-point triple-double. It was after the LeBron game. LeBron was on the Cavs at that time. I was in the elevator, me, him, and one other person. This was the Watch the Throne era. I asked him when Watch the Throne was coming out, and he said, when it's done, huh? And
that's a low-key, great Jay-Z impression there, last second. I appreciate it. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Sure. Sports Illustrated, SI.com, SI's YouTube channel, SI Social, Robin Lundberg Show, CBS Sports Radio. And I guess the next season is over, but you can go back and listen to Full Court on Flatbush. It's a Brooklyn Nets podcast.
Yeah, I feel like you're everywhere, and congratulations to your father, Dolph Lundgren, again.
Yeah.
All right.
He meant a lot to the world, and you're doing special things too. So we appreciate you being on today. For Robin, D'Anthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros Podcast. Good night, everyone.